everybody. Thanks for tuning in. In today's episode, we're talking with Galen J. Williams, who understudied Slave Play, the most Tony Award-nominated Broadway play of all time. We'll learn about his rehearsal process and also find out what it was like to cover 8 roles in the tour of Motown the Musical. He'll tell us how he kept all those parts straight and what went through his mind when he got the call to suddenly go on mid-show. But before we start, if you haven't listened to the introductory episode, please take a few minutes to do that now. All right, places for top of show. Galen J. Williams is an actor, dancer, writer, and was the understudy for the role of Gary in Broadway's Slave Play, which was nominated for 12 Tony Awards, the most nominations ever for a single play. Before that, he was a swing in the Broadway tour Motown the Musical, where he covered 8 roles. Today, we'll talk about his experience both on Broadway and beyond, and what it's like to be an actor during the pandemic. Galen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Amanda. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for doing the pod. I know this is going to be terrific. Can you tell us, just to get started, where you're from originally and how you kind of got to Broadway in the first place?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia. I went to a performing arts high school there called Tri-Cities High School. But that's sort of like where my love for theater was born. I have an older brother who's also an actor. And so actually started off as a dancer first. Ironically enough, my dance teacher is the one who was like, "You're really talented. You have a really nice voice. Like, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Like, you should consider maybe musical theater, or like, you know, opening up your focus beyond dance because you can do more than just dance." And so that got me into musical theater. And come, you know, graduation, I ended up going to Howard University for my undergrad in musical theater. Pretty much like within a year of graduating is when I booked Motown. My very first audition for Motown was like end of first semester of senior year. Like, I made it to final callbacks for the Broadway production. And I didn't think it was going to go my way because I got cut after like the first dance number. And then like over a span of 2 weeks and like 4 or 5 callbacks, they finally gave me an offer. And that's what got me into my first national tour. I got my equity card from that show. And I was on tour with Motown for the next 2.5 years. And we ended up coming back to Broadway. So I made my ensemble Broadway debut with that show as well at the Niederlander in the summer of 2016.
Wow, congratulations. That is awesome. I didn't realize that tour was so long. How did you get the audition for Slave Play? Or not really how did you get the audition, but can you just tell us about the audition and about what the play is about for people out there who don't know? Can you tell us a little bit about the play and a little bit about the character that you understudy in it?
Yeah. So I was actually like living in LA at the time. I just graduated from University of Southern California's MFA program, their acting program. And once I found out about the LA production, it was shortly after that I realized that they were going back to Broadway. But like when I saw the audition, like saw the breakdown, it was like 2 weeks before they were starting rehearsal for Broadway. So I didn't even think that like I was going to be considered. Like, I thought that they were like, you know, casting for LA specifically. The same casting director, he had cast me in a different production in New York that I actually ended up turning down. And then he reached out to me personally. Like, he sent me an email about the Slave Play audition, like had the slave, that was like the whole 10 page packet and everything.
Oh, wow.
But here's the gag. I did not see the email when he sent it to me. He sent it to me on a Monday and it was due on a Thursday. I didn't see the tape until Wednesday.
Oh,
I did not see the packet until Wednesday before it was due on that following Thursday. So I was
the
like kind of freaking out the next day, 10 pages the next day.
Ooh.
So I was like, okay, what kind of witchcraft sorcery can I do to make this happen? We thank God for teleprompters. And when I tell you, I mean, I read for my life. I read those monologues and those scenes like as if I knew them by heart. And, you know, and I have no shame in sharing this because, like, you know, I've I've heard so many success stories from actors who have booked amazing jobs off of like not being completely off book or not memorized and like having whatever cheats they needed to like, you know, get through the audition, because
absolutely
on the other side of the camera, they don't know that there's a machine that's feeding me my lines. All they see is me acting for my life. And so was able to like, I stayed up like all night, you know, because of course, like, I didn't just like cold read the audition. Like I spent the entire day just like really trying to learn as much of it, just familiarize myself with the material as much as I could. And I even knew that, like, I knew that Gary was a role that I would be interested in because I read Slave Play in my last year of grad school. I actually wanted to do like some scene work from it. Yeah. So,
well, that, so who is Gary? Can you tell us a little bit about the character?
Yeah, for sure. So Gary, so Slave Play itself is just like about these, essentially these three, but actually four interracial couples, that are trying to revitalize and revive, the spark in their relationship and their sex lives. And so they undergo this sort of therapy that is based in antebellum sort of like role play. Gary is the Black partner in the interracial gay couple. I think that Gary is an individual who has not been valued. It takes undergoing this therapy for him to realize that like the value that he's always wanted externally has actually always been within him internally. It's been really wonderful to step into those shoes. Let's see, October, November, December.
Three, four months now. Yeah, and congratulations, because you guys just closed, right?
Your last show was yesterday.
Let me get into the understudy part of the job, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you tell our listeners what it's like? What do you do as an understudy? How do you prepare? How do you rehearse? What's the rehearsal process even like? Are you mm-hmm. rehearsing with the other actors or not? Can you tell us a little bit about the nitty gritty of like just what it is about the job that you're doing and how you do it?
I think that Slave Play, our rehearsal process was radically different than any understudy rehearsal process I've ever been a part of. And I'm like so thankful for that because, you know, normally like the understudy or the swing is like normally we stay out of the way. They have like a table off in the corner over on the side of the room for us to like sit, watch, take notes. Yeah, it's kind of expected for the understudy to like stay on the sidelines and just like, you know,
be quiet.
Stay out of the way. You know, they'll get around to you or they'll call you up if you're needed. Like if an actor has to go away for a fitting or something like that, then you can like step in. But it was actually like Robert O'Hara, our fantastic, amazing, wonderful director, literally had understudies up on our feet day one. Which I was just so incredibly thankful for, because like his big thing was like, we have to, like, the understudies have to be ready at a moment's notice, because not only does the play require it, but there's also COVID in the mix. And like, if anybody comes down with COVID, that's already 10 days out. And so like, and so he really gave us the space to be ready.
Good for him. That's mm-hmm. extraordinary. Because that's so rare, as you know, that's so rare that you get the opportunity to actually stand up in a rehearsal and move around and be seen and rehearse like that.
Right. And to actually like rehearse with the onstage cast who you're going to be performing with, you know, like normally they isolate or reserve understudy rehearsal just for the understudies. Mm-hmm. But it was really great that like, you know, Robert would like switch us out to act opposite whoever it was that we're going to be on stage with, which was super helpful. Super, super incredibly helpful. Because actually all of our understudies but one went on during previews. And before opening night, even myself included, like I went on the night before opening night.
Holy.
So that was, you know, that was my debut for Slave Play. So it was really great to know that I was prepared, because we had I really do feel like we shared a rehearsal process. And I also think that like the beauty in sharing a rehearsal process is like sometimes when you're stepping into understudying or like when you are the understudy, it can feel like, you know, the person who's on stage, like this is their role, this is their job. And like, you know, stepping in can kind of feel like a little intimidating, or it can feel like, I don't want to, you know, like, I don't want to like come in and throw anybody else off of what they're doing. But like,
well, for our listeners, you know, normally you've never been on stage with those mm-hmm. principal actors before. And
right.
and in Slave plays, these scenes are so intimate. You mm-hmm. know, that was going to be one of the things that I was going to ask you, like, how do you prepare, not knowing that you guys were able to be up on your feet with the other principals? I was going to ask you, how do you prepare for that level of intimacy with someone that you may or may not have ever exchanged yeah. more than pleasantries with, you know, as yourselves right. in a rehearsal? So that to mm-hmm. me is extraordinary.
That's also credited to our rehearsal process. Like, you know, the onstage cast and with our fight and intimacy director, Claire Warden and Tanise, their last name escapes me. But they were really intentional about making sure that, especially when it came to the intimacy, that that they tailor made the moments to us and our comfortability. So like, but that was like just sort of throughout the rehearsal process in general, like Robert was very specific or like very was very open to letting the understudies as well as the onstage cast like have their own interpretations of the role. Like there was no expectation to like recreate a performance or to like, you know, or mm-hmm. to take on the same choices as the person who's on in the role every night. And like, as far as our intimacy things, like Claire and Tanise were, they literally like gave us the agency to be like, I'm not really comfortable with that. Can we explore this? Or actually I have an idea. Can I try this out? I think that this will feel like I would feel, you know, more powerful in this moment if I did this, as opposed to what Atu or what Joaquin does, you know, like we were really able to like custom make our intimacy, which I really appreciated. You know, me and Devin, whenever I stepped into the role, we had a wonderful chemistry. We had a wonderful like a relationship on stage that was just open. And I mean, but not just my scene partner, but really the entire company. Like they were so supportive whenever an understudy was on, like, you know, at half hour when it's announced, the stage manager does half hour call and they're like, you know, in the role of so-and-so is out and this understudy is on, and like everybody applauds from their dressing room. So like just really wonderful, yay, supportive vibes all around. And I think that was just like, you know, that was just like sort of the nesting bed for understudies to like step into and know that like they're supported and cared for and respected and appreciated.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy to hear that, because, you know, especially during the pandemic, obviously, I mean, that's a great foresight on part of your director and everybody that was involved. But I'm hoping that this kind of starts to shift the balance so that people really start to take note of their understudies and covers and swings in a more
absolutely.
Sort of tangible way, which I think we can definitely talk about, maybe like Motown the Musical and how that was perhaps a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
You know, because like you said, most of the time, the understudies are to be seen and not heard until
right.
previews, maybe they get the show on the road, they start the show, and then they're rehearsing amongst themselves with the stage manager mm-hmm. during the day, and then maybe they're watching the show at night, right?
Yep.
And the goal is for them to be ready at some point, you know, during the first week or two of opening would be great. So there isn't usually a lot of attention spent on checking in with the understudies, making sure that they, you know, have their blocking down without usually having gotten up in rehearsal at all and learning mm-hmm. their lines, which they're totally responsible for on their own. And this just sounds like this radical new approach of folding you guys into the company right away.
Right away.
For sure made a huge difference in the success of
the show. 100%. And I really think that like a shift in prioritization of the understudies is like a part of this, you know, I guess, quote, air quotes, post pandemic. I mean, we're still right. clearly still in the middle of it, but
hello.
But just since like, you know, since theater has come back and has tried to like, you know, make its return in the midst of the pandemic. And like with all this attention around and conversation around understudies and swings and things, like I really do hope and think that the current understudy model is definitely in need of like of renovation and like mm-hmm. you know, because I mean I've heard too many stories actually of like understudies who have had to go on without understudy rehearsal, without costumes ready, like, and it just, you know, it's just proof that like The understudies are part of the company just as much as the onstage company is. They deserve to be prioritized and prepared just as much as the onstage company is, you know, from day one. And I think
I'm like snapping over here.
Yes.
For sure. Because like at the end of the day too, like you're that understudy who's going on, those audience members, they don't know. You've never held that cigarette before. You've never closed that purse, that case, that briefcase. You have never worn that wig before, that mustache, that glue. It's new sometimes. You know, when you have not had the opportunity to, like you're saying, wear those costumes, like do that walking. And it is all on you. It is all on your shoulders to like, you are in it to win it.
Yep.
Can you tell me how your experience, what was the tour like for Motown? Because understudying eight.
Yeah, I covered eight dancer singers. Yeah.
Oh my Lord.
And literally, like, I covered the lowest bass to the highest tenor. It was madness.
Oh, how do you do it?
My 23-year-old brain, I tell you that. I was just young and green and excited and just glad to do any and everything for the show. I mean, like, I was literally learning everything. Just that was also like one of the huge differences between my experience at Motown and my experience at Slave Play. We were up on our feet day one in Motown. However, it was like in the background or like off to the side. They kind of like went into the process like open for the swings. Like, they didn't know who was going to cover what or who. So like, it was just like a blanket precedent to learn everything, which was, you know, looking back on it, it was like, that's not really setting me up for success. Exactly.
Yeah, like, but amazing, also cruel.
Yeah. And so, like I said, at the time, like, I was just so young and so eager and so excited to be a part of like my first Broadway show, and not just any Broadway show, but Motown the Musical, which was like, you know, I'd seen the show and had heard the soundtrack and was like obsessed with like this beautiful moment of Black Broadway on the stage and like Motown music. Like, I love that music. Yes. I love that era. So yeah, like
do anything.
Yeah, literally. I would have done it. I was learning the Supremes choreography. I was like, you know, like the women's group, the men's group. I was literally learning everything. But yeah, how did I do it? You know,
How did you learn you know, obviously there's some space and rehearsal, but like, were you dancing in your living room, your apartment? Like, how are you?
It was a matter of like, and especially, I mean, musicals are just so different from plays in that like, there are so many moving parts. There are so many like other aspects and elements that you add into the mix outside of dialogue, like vocal parts, harmonies, and then there's also choreography, and then like stage entrances and exits, and there's backstage tracking, like the quick changes and things like that. So during rehearsal for Motown, my way in was, you know, like I said, I started off as a dancer first. So it was like, let me learn all this choreography first. I sort of learned like a new level of type A-ness through
you
that
have
process.
To.
You have
you
to
have
because
to,
like,
as an understudy.
It was like a matter of like, you know, really taking detailed and specific notes of like, okay, so-and-so is, okay, they're all in a diagonal. So just, you know, using X's. And like, I mean, I swear like my script looked like a freaking football play, like playbook, you know, like X's and O's and arrows and crosses and all these things. Yes. And so like, it was really like a lot of recording, a lot of like recording videos that were like behind as opposed to from in front. So that like, whenever I'm watching, it's like, I'm on the stage, not looking at the stage and having to reverse the, you know, the video footage. So it was a lot of note taking, but I think videos were like my saving grace, for rehearsal. And actually, our rehearsal director would get on us. He'd be like, stop recording and get on your feet. Like, you're not going to learn from a video. You're going to learn from like being on your feet. And so I found value in both. That was sort of the way to it. And once we knew, like, you know, who we were covering, who my first covers were, who my second covers were. And what that means is like, the first covers are there were four guys who I was the first cover for. Whenever those four were out, they would come to me first to be like, hey, you're on for this role, because there were three male swings. And between the three of us, like, I cover eight, one of the other male swings covered, I think he covered 12 because he had like some principals in the mix. And then our dance captain, who covered four or five. So like, between the three of us, we had all fronts covered.
Okay. Okay. Wait a second. I just have to take a breath and process that for a hot minute because it's rolling off your tongue. Like this ain't no thing. And
yeah.
Guys, learning 8, 10, 12 parts. I mean, learning one, that's a handful. That's what the principal is getting paid for. They're doing their one job. And then you've got these swings back here and these covers, these understudies. They are learning the lines. They are learning the songs. They are learning
staging,
the dancing.
Blocking.
They're learning where they go. They learning the blocking. They're learning where the costume changes are for every character, how long they have to get into costume, the backstage choreography, which you don't even think about.
Woo. That was a game changer for me. Because I mean, it was like, okay, great. So you have the onstage show, but then once you get into tech and you start to trail people backstage, it's like, okay, I'm going to see like what so-and-so does in his track. And then you like realize that they have like three or four quick changes and you're like, oh snap. So they get off this stage and then they have to like, book it to the other side of the stage and like take off this wig, get into this wig, get into the, you know, take off these clothes, get into this next costume. So like, I literally had costume plots. I had folders. I wrote out every single track from like top of show to end of show, you know, like, so, okay, you start here, grab your mic from here, grab this prop, put that prop back, go over to this corner for this quick change, get into that wig. So you enter wing 3, exit wing 1, stage left, like, you know, the number, like the stage is numbered 0 to 12 and land on 8, stage right, or land on center, like just ooh, madness.
You're giving me chills. You're laying down so much information right now because I do not think people know.
Yeah.
I do not think people understand. Like,
it's truly a whole world of its own. And I mean, like, you know, it's and come to think of it, like I'm reminiscing with a smile just because like I learned so much from that experience with Motown. Not, you know, of course, like artistically as a swing, but just like so much about the business and about the industry and, you know, like about our unions and, you know, the ways that they sometimes are or are not helpful, you know, which is also a thing. And so it's just like your brain, you learn so much about your brain. Like, honestly, our brains are literal computers, like muscle memory. That got me through 2.5 years on the road of covering 8 different people. Because I mean, like, as shows go on, as people get more comfortable in their jobs and in their roles, like, you know, people get a little more relaxed. And so you go from like not being on as much to being on all the time. Like, I will never forget, there was one week where I did like 6 out of my 8 tracks in one single week.
No.
Like Tuesday was on for this, Wednesday on for a different track, Thursday on for a different track, and then you're on for the same track 2 shows Saturday, and then you're on for a different show, you're on for a different track 1 show Sunday. It's like,
did you ever get the tracks mixed up? Was your brain just like exploding and like a schizophrenic?
Oh my goodness. There have definitely been times where I was like last minute, like, oh snap, I'm about to make the wrong entrance. Or like, there'll be a time where I'm like, so like there's one of the big ensemble numbers in Motown was War. That one is like, it's real angular. There are a bunch of like lines and like, you know, switches and pivots and all these things. And like, and entrances and exits. And like, there was this one time where I was, you know, I was on for this one track. That track enters in wing 1. And right before the song was about to start, I was like in wing 1. One of my castmates who was like waiting for me to go out in front of them, he was like, Galen, over here. And I was like, oh snap. So like, and it's like, War, and you're on. So it's like those like last minute like brain farts of like,
yeah,
am I in the right way? Who am I today? Where am I? How am I? Why am I? Like, just those questions definitely come up when you're like balancing 8 different parts in your head. Oh, and God. You know, there were times on stage where like where you forget a line or say the wrong line at the wrong time, and you're, you know, and everybody knows it, and everybody tries not to laugh, but then you all get off stage and bust out laughing. Like, you know, it was, those moments definitely happen. I mean, they're sort of like bound to, because, you know, you're just out the night before everybody, and that one person that you were out with last night decides to call out for the matinee, and you're the one that has to be on for the matinee. And
no, it's like, because they might have had a margarita too many.
You know, Yeah, those situations, you know, it's like errors, mistakes are sort of like bound to happen. But, you know, we like we laugh it off, or like, you know, at the end of the day, we're not doing brain surgery. We're all like doing a show and entertaining people, and the show still goes on with or without those mistakes, you know. And they actually like it's memory building, memory making. So yeah. Yeah.
Now, how often did you tell me about like the notice that you got? Because obviously, if someone is sick during COVID, you kind of know, you get a heads up immediately, that kind of thing. But oftentimes things can happen at the last minute. Was there ever a time where you rolled into rehearsal, you were getting cozy backstage thinking it was just going to be another night, and suddenly you were on?
Oh, yeah. There were actually a couple of as the show is happening. Swing-ons that happened in Motown. Now, thankfully, I never had a situation where like I had to like rush into costume for Slave Play. Like I pretty much always had advance notice except for the night that I debuted. But there were actually a couple of times in Motown where I got notice at like 10 minutes to curtain. So I like came in, you know, a half hour signed in, thinking, you know, I'm not on, thinking everything's cool. And then like 10 minutes before places, stage management comes and is like, hey, you're on for this track. And I was like, oh, okay.
Wow. Okay, wait. Exactly that. Like, I want you to explain that noise. Like, what happens in your brain when that happens? Because it's crazy. And what happened, if you don't mind my asking, and you can say, like, that you went on with such short notice?
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, in those situations where you come in not exactly prepared or think, not well, not prepared, but not exactly thinking that you're going to be on, and then you get such short notice, or like the time where the show was happening and something happened mid-show and I had to like get like, you know, just get into mic, get into costume, get into wardrobe and like go. And it's like, okay, well, I would sort of like always use like, you know, whether I was on or not, thankfully, I just kind of like got into the habit of warming up like with the cast or like warming up on stage or like in my dressing room just to be like, just in case I am on or something, like, let me not go into this completely cold. In those situations where like when it was happening during the show, like there was no room to like roll down my body or like, you know, to warm up my voice. Like you just kind of like scream a little bit, give them a couple, hey, ho, you know, make sure that you're present like vocally to like step into it. But like, you know, it's just sort of, I've definitely seen the gambit of like, you know, I've seen the swings who get like pissed off by it. And I've seen the swings who just like sort of don't make any fuss about it and just go into it. And I kind of feel like I was like right in the middle of those two types. Like, you know, I wouldn't, I could, not that I couldn't get pissed off about it, but like, I just decided not to get pissed off about it because it was like, that's just a part of the job. It would have been lovely and it would have been great and ideal to have had like some heads up or advance notice or like just a moment to like check in or just to mentally prepare myself. But sometimes like, you know, that's just that readiness that is required of you in the job of like, you know, always being ready to go, always being prepared with half as much or a quarter of as much preparation time.
Yeah. And yeah, so, because, you know, some people say you never know when you're going to go on. And just that alone, just processing, having that in your brain, you're sort of constantly in a state of readiness, right?
Oh, yeah. Always. Always. I don't know how to, I don't even know what word to describe to it. Like, there's kind of like an air of confidence that you like have to have just so that you don't like get lost in like the anxiety of never knowing when you're gonna go, you know? For me, at least, like I just had to know my parts like the back of my hand. All those moments where I wasn't on, like until I felt comfortable enough with all of my tracks, I was either watching the show, whether that's from backstage or from the house or like rehearsing the show in whatever rehearsal space the theater had while the show was going on. And of course, like, you know, they do give us like understudy rehearsals to give us like an opportunity to focus in on one track or to focus in on one part.
Can you tell the listeners out there who've never, you know, experienced this, what is an understudy? What would be like a typical understudy rehearsal, for example?
The understudy rehearsals were vastly different between musical and play. For musical, the understudy rehearsals, it was all of the swings as well as the ensemble understudy. So anyone who in the ensemble who was on stage every night, but they covered one of the principal roles. Normally understudy rehearsal was their chance. I mean, it was their opportunity to rehearse their principal track. And it was the swings opportunity to either hop around to whatever, you know, gap on the stage needed to be filled or whatever one track they wanted to focus on. So like, if there was a track that I hadn't done for like weeks or months, I'd be like, I haven't done this track in a while, so I'm gonna just like refresh my memory on this one and focus on this one today. Like stage manager would be like, what track are you focusing on? Or is there anything that you, you know, like want to pay extra attention to? That was like the process for musical. But for Slave Play, I understood rehearsals looked like line throughs, like speed line throughs. And actually, mm-hmm. like, you know, we did have three understudies who covered two parts in Slave Play. And so like they, yes. and they would take on, you know, they would take on the task of like, I can speed through with both. And so they would be like, wow, you know, yes. flipping through like, you know, yes. Therapist or the other role. And so like, I commend and applaud them for that, because that like,
yes.
there's just so much text, like there's so many monologues.
Yes. I have to say, like, I remember when I was understudying The Importance of Being Earnest, and I was understudying the role of both Gwendolyn and Cecily. Oh. And my partner was, you know, understudying both of the male lead roles. So it was mm-hmm. the two of us, you know, doing speed line throughs to yeah. each other in both characters, but our yeah. characters talking to each other, you know, it was yeah. insane.
Becomes like an insane, like one person show at a
yes.
bit. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was sort of like what the understudy rehearsals looked like between Slave Play and Motown.
So Galen, what is next for you, my friend?
Well, so I'm luckily, gratefully, thankfully continuing on as understudy for Slave Play in LA. So we'll be making the West Coast premiere at the Mark Taper Forum.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I am the only understudy that is understudying from New York. So they're like getting all completely new understudies from LA. But it works out because I was based in LA anyway. So I'm going back home with a job.
Oh, great. Amen. Oh, bless your heart. Congratulations. Yes.
Yeah. So that's next. And I've been doing a lot of writing, just trying to create my own opportunities for myself and not necessarily wait for the next thing. You know, of course, like I'm still auditioning for like, hopefully, you know, going back to LA, I book a pilot or I book, you know, a nice role on a TV show. That's sort of like the hope and the prayer beyond mm-hmm. Slave Play. But yeah, I'm really like just sort of leaning into how can I be in control of my career creatively, artistically, and, you know, like how can I create opportunities for myself? And so like, I'm also like, you know, looking into teaching and education and like, you know, because I do love that aspect of it. I'm also an acting coach, you know, trying to avoid retail or side job by any and all means necessary, and like truly just paying my bills off of creative and artistic
snapping
work.
Over here. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And it is a hustle, as we mm-hmm. know, it is a hustle and a half, and it is truly hard work. So I wish you all the luck in the world. And
thank
before
you.
We go, you're welcome. And before we go, for our listeners out there who like what we're doing, love hearing about this stuff and want to support the show, you can go to the website, and for the cost of a latte, you can subscribe and you can get access to a lot of behind the scenes content. The website is www.waitinginthewingsbroadway.com. And there, if you subscribe, you can get access to some behind the scenes, really cool stuff. And I wanted you, Galen, to just briefly talk about what we had discussed the other day before the interview of mm-hmm. what you're going to provide for the behind the scenes content. I know it's going to be some kind of a monologue or a scene from the satirical one act that you are writing called The Tragedy of Being Christian, which I think is so yeah. awesome. Can you just entice our listeners with yeah. what that might be?
Yeah, The Tragedy of Being Christian, it's a one act satire, and it's based off of, I don't know if anyone has seen the Lifetime movie Prayers for Bobby, but I saw this movie on Lifetime. Sigourney Weaver is like the lead, and it's about a guy who is queer and he is a part of a very religious family, and once his family finds out that he's queer, they have the hardest time accepting him for who he is. They kind of like shun and cast him out, and it eventually leads to him committing suicide, and his suicide sends his mother on this journey of self-discovery, actually, of herself. And, you know, she like goes on this like this journey to find out, like, is her son okay in the afterlife, you know, based off of all this stuff that religion has thrown her way. And it, and actually her going on this journey, it actually like turns her from like homophobic Bible thumping sort of figure to like actually being an ally for queer children and parents, and like hoping and like her doing the work to like prevent other youth and queer youth from taking their life from having unsupportive parents. So I was like, wow, I wonder what this would look like in a Black family. So, you know, because I'm Black and queer. And so I took this story and satirized it and, you know, made it about like this guy who's named Christian, who has a very religious mother, who's like this dramatic, over the top ingenue. Like literally she speaks like she's from a Shakespeare play the entire time. It's a play that I've been working on for, you know, sometimes as a writer, I don't know if you relate, but like sometimes as a writer, like, you know, you write these things and they just like sit in your documents file unshared, unpublished. And as I'm just trying to get more confidence and get more notice in my writing, I'm choosing to share an excerpt from this script.
I haven't
decided if it's going to be like a scene or a monologue yet, but it'll be from the script and it'll be wonderful and it'll be amazing. Yes. I might be in it. I might get, you know, or It might be a friend of mine, but yeah, it'll definitely be something worth tapping in and tuning into. So
thank you. Yeah, I just want to commend you for your bravery, because that takes a lot of courage to put that out there. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like an incredible story that I just feel like is a big privilege that we would have a little sneak peek into that world that you are creating. So
yeah, thank you.
Thank you for that.
And I'm excited to share it.
Yes. And Galen J. Williams, thank you for being a guest today on the pod, my friend. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so much for having me, Amanda. This is a wonderful conversation.
Hey, guys, Amanda here. If you enjoyed this episode, please visit the website www.waitinginthewingsbroadway.com and unlock some of that awesome behind-the-scenes content. Thanks.